From education to employment and everything in between. It's a clearinghouse for all things shale. It's the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender.
Good morning, I'm DC Taylor. Bill is away this week, so we will be presenting to you some encore presentation type of stuff, a bunch of news stories that we have presented to you in the last few weeks. In case you missed any of it, well, you get to hear it now. 25 minutes from now, approximately, Rusty Fender and I will have for you a fresh Fender's Fest and or fun facts for this week. And about 45 minutes from now will be a fresh new top five, the top five stories of the week from MarcellusDrilling.com, and also the latest in the job segment towards the end of the show. For right now, from last week, here's Bill.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier, and I am back in Pennsylvania this week, but only for a short time. I was in Florida last week, beautiful, sunny, and I know our own DC Taylor is going to be heading that way here soon.
Yeah.
As he's getting ready to take a few days in the sun. But now I'm back in the cold, rainy, wet Northeast PA. But luckily it's only for a few hours because I turn around and fly right back out to New Mexico and Texas. But what about yourself? You're leaving for a couple of days, right, DZ?
Yes, Bill. Good morning. Yes. So you're bouncing all over the country. I'm bouncing from here, to 1,000 miles south. And, so I go see my girlfriend and, down in Florida twice a year. And, going to go take a little road trip.
Well, we were just chatting before the show started. I had this interesting situation because we booked our flight, I guess, far enough out. We were able to secure the exact same seats on all four legs of our flight, two down, two back. We flew to Charlotte and then into Melbourne, Florida.
Yeah.
And it was the exact same plane, both ways. So that was kind of neat. And then, but on the way down, as you and I were joking, I didn't have anyone seated next to me. So it was like I was in first class and I had elbow room and I could lean over and had plenty of room. And then on the flight back, my luck ran out. The first leg of the flight back wasn't so bad. Nice lady. She was there. She didn't take up much elbow room like I did. So I was able to use the armrest, the middle one and the side one. Yeah. And then my luck really ran out on the flight home. The last person to get on the plane, larger gentleman, and you know, and many people who know me, I'm also a larger gentleman. So let's just say we were like busting at the seams out of our seat. I spent the entire flight leaning to my right over to the aisle where I routinely was hit by the lady walking by with the cart.
Oh, jeez. Poor fella.
So I'm not really looking forward to my turnaround and having to do that all again. Hopefully my luck holds true and nobody's sitting on top of me on the flights.
Yeah, start buying like three. If it's the three-seater thing, buy three of those things and you get the whole row to yourself.
Lay across it. Actually, fun story. I doubt my brother-in-law or cousin-in-law listens to this. He's a night shifter. But he was telling us about how he and his at the time it was his fiance went to Australia, and I want to say that he didn't realize it was like 20 hours of travel.
Yeah.
And when he realized they only booked coach seats in the back, he runs up to the desk and he's like, "Oh, can I upgrade to first class?" And they're like, "No, it's a full flight." And he's like, "Well, is there anything we can do?" And the guy was like, "Well, there's like a row of five seats I could sell you." And I guess he ended up buying the whole row of five seats so he could lay across it on the flight down.
All right.
Yeah. When you're in a situation like that, but yeah. Well, it is nice to be back, and it is nice to be on the Shale Gas News kick here and bringing folks the energy topics that they need. I guess when I was away, I forgot to ask before we started the show, when I was away, I missed that little bit of winter weather that we had. What was that like, DC?
Winter weather. Let's see. It wasn't significant, at least not where I've been. You know, mostly I'm mostly here in the Wyoming Valley or up here on West Mountain in Scranton. I mean, there was,
I heard everything from a little bit of sleet and snow to some ice, and then it was all gone like 24 hours later, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. It was, you know, it was not a huge thing, at least, you know, so parts of the area where I've been. It was fine. You know, there was some scraping going on, scraping it off the car. But other than that, it was okay.
Well, I was curious to ask too, because for those who don't know, but we've discussed on the show, DC's headquarters is on top of the mountain.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's dangerous to traverse in the winter weather.
Yeah, no, it's that the hill was fine. We affectionately refer to it as the hill or the mountain.
The hill. Well, that's good to hear. And, yeah. And of course, I think I was sitting poolside when all that was going on. Of course. All right, couple of news stories. Three questions answered on the Ukraine's war impact on energy, according to E&E News. Before Russia invaded Ukraine, plans to cut carbon emission were everywhere. President Joe Biden had just taken office in 2021, saying that he wanted to decarbonize the U.S. electric grid within 15 years. And at the COP26 climate summit in Scotland, countries pledged to cut fossil fuel use and roll back oil and gas subsidies. And if I recall, at that summit, all of the world leaders who made those pledges also flew private jets and planes to get there.
Right.
Then on February 24th, 2022, bombs fell in Ukraine as invading troops swept into Eastern European country. Rather than facing just the dilemma of how to manage a pending shift to cleaner fuel sources to help stave off the worst impacts of climate change, major nations face two more immediate pressing issues: energy security and sky high prices. And then we saw an immediate push to I don't want to say recarbonize, but readdress the dynamics of the world's energy markets. We saw at the same time as Russia's threats and eventual follow through on threats to curtail natural gas supplies to Europe, there was a war, if you will, on oil. And oil and energy being produced from Russia, embargoes and price controls and all sorts of what do they call them when they block other countries from buying or selling the products?
Sanctions.
They were all imposed, and we saw a dramatic shift in energy prices, where gas, natural gas, gasoline, everything skyrocketed. And then the world shifted. Countries like the United States moved its LNG and energy production to Europe, where it's traditionally been going to Asia and Asian markets, other markets around the world. So now the interesting thing is, where do we go from here? If nothing else, this war, which still continues to go on, and hopefully it comes to an end soon, has demonstrated that even with the best of intentions to decarbonize, the push to just go to green energy overnight or within a few years doesn't make sense. Again, we've said this on the show many times. We need more fossil fuels. The population of the world continues to grow. The demands of energy continue to grow. So we cannot just assume solar, wind, hydro, and other green energy sources are going to be there 100% tomorrow. And I don't even think they'll be there in 10 or 15 years. Not saying we shouldn't invest in them, of course, but I think this demonstrates why we should be investing more in oil and natural gas production here in the United States and the capacities to export that. Why energy bills skyrocketed in the U.S. West. E&E News also reports that politicians across the U.S. are vowing to take action after high home heating and electricity bills left some consumers paying triple their normal amounts this winter. Surging prices afforded politicians like Colorado Governor Jared Polis a chance to tout his state's move away from natural gas, while California Governor Gavin Newsom called on federal regulators to investigate market manipulation. State lawmakers have warned utilities that they could face more scrutiny if prices remain high, with the Colorado General Assembly even setting up a special joint committee to investigate utility rates. Market analysts say utility prices are expected to come down soon, but not because of anything politicians did. Instead, high natural gas prices, compounded by storage constraints and pipeline troubles, are dropping from their winter peaks, removing the biggest cause of rising bills. I'm glad the story highlights that. A lot of these problems could be solved by more infrastructure. The infrastructure we currently are using in most of this country was built for populations in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And now we just assume, because the lights turn on and because we have gas in our stoves or our heating systems, that, oh, everything's fine. Let's, you know, move on from that. And the reality is, sometimes these utility systems are barely putting everything together. You know, behind the scenes, they're not, people aren't appreciating that when we have severe winter weather events, especially in cold, cold winters or hot, hot summers, that how close we come to sometimes seeing brownouts or blackouts. I think California, it's becoming more regularly, especially over the summer, where they get warned of rolling blackouts to try and balance the electrical grid. So again, the solution to that is build more infrastructure, make the energy more available. I also think it's an opportunity to reevaluate the competition side of it. You know, one of the things in this country, utility events or utilities are given certain protections. They don't necessarily have to compete against each other because they have franchises. The franchises basically say, hey, you know, you have to serve the public in the best possible way. And because of that, you don't have to worry about competing necessarily with another gas utility or whatnot. They still have to compete against, say, propane or even up here in Northeast PA, coal, or, you know, people have optionality, of course. But sometimes with those utilities, the question remains, are we getting the best service? Are there ways to introduce new competition? Are there ways to reevaluate that? And also at the same time, too, we have to understand that they are hit with the same workforce issues. They're hit with the same supply chain issues, regulatory issues, etc. So maybe we need to reevaluate the costs that government is artificially creating and that the utilities have to respond to. So I think there are a lot of things that have to be done. I don't think it's easy for – I don't think it's – there's a solution just for somebody like Gavin Newsom or Jared Polis out there in Colorado just to point at utilities and say, you're being greedy, you're price gouging these people. I think there's a bigger issue. It's an issue compounded by many different variables. But the one thing that we can all agree on is – more oil and natural gas production domestically, more infrastructure to get that energy to the people that need it will help resolve these problems. And DC, if I recall, you currently rely on fuel oil. Do you even have natural gas availability in your neighborhood, or is it just not even an option for you?
It's not an option. They never ran the lines. I guess the neighbors never got together and said, hey, let's get natural gas installed. So yeah, it's either oil or else I run electric space heaters.
Yeah. So that's just another example. Like, how many people are like you in the Valley even? And you would assume that the Wilkes-Barre-Scranton market all the way down the Hazleton, et cetera, everyone would have natural gas and they don't. So what are we doing to connect more people? Natural gas on a dollar for dollar basis, once it's established, built out and everyone's using it, is typically the lowest cost option for heating your home in the winter. And why aren't we trying to push more of that? Instead, you see other states like was in New York and California. They're trying to push and ban any new hookups. They're trying to push and ban any new appliances from using the products. Well, what do you think that's ultimately going to do? It's going to cause the utility companies probably to charge more and more, and the supply of the product getting to those who can actually access it will continue to be, you know, limited, which ultimately will lead to price increases as well. So it's not really a solution to the problem unless your solution is making everybody switch over to green energy, electricity, et cetera. And that's just a bigger issue to be had. So again, the solution here is through expanding the energy industry, working with utility companies, working with the producers, figuring out what the hurdles are, the cost constraints that we can control, and then making sure that those savings are passed on to consumers. And hopefully we'll see that in our lifetimes, DC.
Right. Yeah, that would be very nice to see.
Oil and gas industry could slash methane emissions by 75% with barely a hit to income, says IEA. The energy industry is not making sufficient efforts to reduce its methane emissions, according to a new report from the International Energy Agency. Carbon dioxide is the largest contributor to global warming, but while CO2 is 200 times more present in the atmosphere than methane and lasts a lot longer, methane's warming effects are around 85 times stronger, and it's contributed 30% to the rise in global temperature since the Industrial Revolution. The energy sector is the second largest source of human-caused methane, behind only agriculture, which was responsible for 40% of human-created methane in 2022. I like how they emphasize human-created methane, too, because I forget the gentleman, he joined our show a couple of times to discuss it, but when you factor in volcanoes and swamps and termites and cow farts and things like that, there's a lot of methane produced. And then the question becomes, like, even if we reduced and eliminated all the human-created methane, is that enough to stop global warming or climate change? Or is the Earth going to continue to do it? Will it slow down? Who knows? This story reminds me of one I was reading late last night. You know, when you get off the plane, D.C., from traveling all day or just driving all day, you get to your hotel room or your house and you sit down and you're so exhausted, but you're so exhausted you can't sleep. Yeah. So then you stay up for two more hours.
Right.
Yeah, that was me last night, and I found a story. Have you heard about ChatGPT yet?
Yes.
The AI bot that you can talk to?
Yes, of course.
I've been using it. I love the thing. But I guess somebody started talking to ChatGPT about climate change. Uh-huh. And, you know, while it returned the normal stuff, talking about how climate change is bad and we need to reduce our emissions. And again, I'm not arguing that one way or another. I think cleaning up our air and our waterways and our environment is a positive, but I just believe we can do it simultaneously while still utilizing fossil fuels like natural gas and oil that are produced responsibly. But I know I'm off on a tangent. Let me finish the tangent real quick. It was interesting because even ChatGPT, after talking about all of the research and how it's commonly accepted that climate change is real, ChatGPT acknowledged that, you know, even over the last couple of years, though, there seems to have been a slowdown in the warming of the Earth.
Oh, wow.
And that was interesting, again, because people are pushing it and politicians especially push it as the most troubling and most important issue of our time. And I think they use it more as a rallying call to get what they want done. But what's interesting is at the same time that even if it's slowed down or paused or whatever the case may be, we're using more fossil fuels today than we were yesterday and last year and the year before and all those times. So it does call in the question, if we can produce more of this resource responsibly and manage it and simultaneously see a reduction to climate change emissions and or threats to the environment – it leads me to believe that they can coexist and we can enjoy them versus having to eliminate them completely. I know it was a long-winded tangent, but it was interesting that this AI bot that's supposed to be considered what the leading AI artificial intelligence program out there was even suggesting that, you know, the data and whatnot suggests that there might be a pause or a slowdown or something like that. I'll see if I can find the article later or next week even.
I'm quite surprised to hear that because a lot of what I've been hearing about ChatGPT and things of that nature is that, let's just say they lean politically or sociopolitically a little too in one particular direction. You take a guess as to, you know, with big tech behind it, you take a guess which way it is. So I'm surprised to hear that it actually says, oh, no, it could be slowing down a little bit. So that's interesting.
Could be slowing down. Let's see. I found the article here. Fox News. It says ChatGPT alters response. Nope, that's the wrong one. I'll see if I can find it. Oh, here you go. ChatGPT confesses global warming. Not much since 2016. Again, Fox News story reporting this. But ChatGPT was responding to Steve Malloy, Junk Science founder, who pushed a lengthy exchange with ChatGPT and published it all. He asked a simple question. Is CO2 warming a hoax? ChatGPT responds, no, it's widely accepted that the scientific facts show that it is actively happening and that human activity has fueled some of that change. But down here, ChatGPT acknowledges that the NOAA's data shows there hasn't been a warming since 2015. And it insists that that global temperatures have not exceeded the 2016 record highs. So that's what I'm getting at is, and that's probably what the data does suggest. Now, of course, people will jump at that and say it's cyclical and there's cycles of warming and cooling and all that. And I do believe that the Earth does go through cycles, and how much of that is either exaggerated for the purposes of political gain or business gain. But I just thought it was interesting that this device, as you were saying, was even recognizing that, hey, you know, maybe it's not happening every year at the rate that everybody says it's happening at.
All right.
It just came out February 24th, 5 a.m. Oh, I guess I was up really late now that I'm seeing it. 5 a.m., 24th of February, ChatGPT confession, global warming, not much since 2016. That's the article. Check it out yourself. Again, I'm just sharing the news here. We're not taking really a position on it. And maybe it'll help inform your decision. But I will say I do enjoy using that program, and I'm looking forward to seeing what other types of programs like that come out in the future. Let's see here. Column on oil and gas mini slump, all part of the cycle. And as you know, we have ups and downs in the oil and gas industry, and this is no different. Oil and gas prices are in another mini slump nearly 3 years after they hit, were hit by the first wave of COVID in North America and Western Europe. But the latest downturn is part of a cycle in manufacturing activity and energy prices that has repeated with an average duration of every 3 to 4 years since the early 90s. After adjusting for core consumer prices, the price of Brent crude is falling 30% from its peak last year, and U.S. natural gas prices are down about 70% from their peak last August. In real terms, this is, again, just part of the cycle. They go up, they go down, they go up, they go down. And the energy industry, and we're in the earnings season now, so companies are reporting on their fourth quarter and year-end results, and then they're given their guidance for what 2023 year looks like. And different companies have different takes, but the consensus typically at this point in time, when we start to see that price pull back and that change, companies start addressing that by changing their plans. Maybe they're not going to run as many drilling rigs or as many frac crews or bring as many wells online. So it's all about kind of balancing it, because the energy industry right now, as we've discussed, is really focused on giving back to the shareholders through dividends, through share repurchasing. Some companies are even offering special dividends at the end of the year when there's additional cash flow because they understand the ups and downs of the commodity cycle. I think the other thing that's interesting that'll be different than in years past, it appears that companies are not as overstretched or burdened with debt. There weren't as many mergers and acquisitions. There weren't as many new plays, new discoveries. Some of that had to do with supply chain. Some of that had to do with inflation. Some of it really just had to do with the oil and gas industry spending the better part of the early 2010s struggling through bad cycles, if you will, and bad decisions. So I think the energy industry overall is in a much better position financially. So even if there is a cycle, a mini cycle or a prolonged cycle of an up and a down, I think the energy industry will be in a better spot. And I think it will help us as a country and our economy through that cycle much quicker. Obviously, we'll spend the better part of 2023 watching that. If it's short term, is it 6 months? Is it a year? Is it 2 years? Who knows? And nobody can predict those things. But it's not extraordinary to see the ups and the downs. Freeport gains federal approval for a restart, but not before natural gas futures fall further. Fresh off a week of mostly steady declines, as we just discussed, natural gas futures extended their losses, which is interesting because Friday's close was around $2. Henry Hub price to a little over $2. And this story is referencing Freeport LNG issued or has been constrained because of issues last year. There was a fire and explosion that occurred there, and it knocked off Freeport's ability to produce LNG and export it worldwide. The need for LNG around the world continues to grow. And of course, the international markets are usually paying more for that LNG, so companies really like to move the product over there because it commands a higher price. But now as LNG prices are falling here, they're also going to fall worldwide. So the question remains, will Freeport or, you know, LNG capacity remain at the high? And I think we closed out the year at an all-time high. Will we keep that up? I think, again, just as my personal opinion, I think yes. I think the world's needs for LNG, especially with what's going on in Russia and other places, are going to continue to push countries like the United States and Qatar to produce as much LNG as they possibly can to get it to the worldwide market while also meeting our domestic needs. And I think this country needs to invest more in LNG export capacity because those facilities take so long to build. The permitting is very arduous and takes a long time. And then, of course, the financing of those entities as well is difficult. So it takes a long lead time. So if we stop or pause the development of those things, we won't be ready the next time the need is there, whether it's a environmental need, whether it's a geopolitical need, an economic need. We need to invest in this stuff. We need to have a better energy policy plan for things like LNG than we currently have. Republicans to the SEC chair, hand over climate rules records now. Congressional Republicans want SEC Chair Gary Gensler to answer questions about the agency's efforts to write new regulations that would force companies to disclose climate-related information. We are deeply concerned with the SEC's lack of transparency and disregard for legitimate congressional oversight inquiries and call on you to be more responsive to these information requests going forward. The House Committee on Financial Services and Senator Tim Scott of the Senate Committee on Banking, Housing and Urban Affairs demands of the SEC. The lawmakers want the SEC to provide these answers by March 8th on a range of questions about the climate disclosure rule, which was proposed nearly a year ago and would require companies to provide detailed information about their climate risk exposure, greenhouse gas emissions, and more. We'll see how it goes. But to me, again, the proof is in the pudding. The country from the oil and gas sector is already driving change. It's already implementing new techniques, new technologies. Companies are highlighting how they've reduced flaring or eliminated flaring. They've changed over valves from bleeding valves to non-bleeding valves. They implemented programs either manually or through drone technology that go out and scan the sites. And if they find any leak, even if it's a small, teeny tiny leak, they address it expeditiously, right? So these are things that we weren't doing 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago as an oil and gas industry, but we are now. And we're seeing the results as not only companies are reducing their emissions output, but the country itself is seeing emissions output declines as well. So the question remains, why are we as an industry being forced to do more of this kind of bureaucracy stuff for DC? What's the ultimate goal? If it was the other way and emissions and stuff were off the charts and there's a lot more issues environmentally, locally, whatever it is, these things would kind of make sense. But I think the industry has said in organizations like the MSC here locally, API globally, and IPAA, are all kind of pushing back to say, we already have the regulations on the books. Let us kind of fulfill what we're already doing. You already have multiple agencies coming after us. We don't need another agency like the SEC, which really isn't even tasked with environmental benefit or change, going after the oil and gas industry as well. Because again, the concerns have been and will be that the SEC or other agencies, especially the obscure ones, push and try to control the oil and gas industry, the banking industry, the financial industry, and eventually the capital and or investments dry up and then new infrastructure isn't funded. And when new infrastructure isn't funded, we find ourselves in situations like California and Colorado and Ukraine and Europe where we don't have the infrastructure that we need to meet our needs. And that's just not where we want to be. But a place we do want to be, of course, is with Rusty Fender. Fender, what do you got for us this week on Fender's Fast Facts?
Thank you, Bill and DC. And on this date, coming up the 13th, which is Monday, back in 1980, the biggest settlement from the Ford Motor Company happened with the Ford Pinto. I know, insert joke here.
Yeah, this legendary.
I told you, you know that. It was my first car. My folks bought me a 1973 brand new powder blue Ford Pinto hatchback.
Yeah.
I remember it was fully loaded. The sticker price in 1973 was $1,900.
All right.
That's the tax on some of the cars these days.
Yeah.
But I, you know what? I had a Pinto. I had that for a year, and then I had two brand new Chevy Vegas after that. Again, insert joke here. Never had a problem with any of those cars. So say what you want.
Okay.
But biggest settlement back in 1980 after a couple people were killed with the exploding gas tank. Nothing to joke about. But DC, one of the 10 most disappointing cars, Ford ever made. Number one was the Pinto. And because of that, some interesting facts about the Pinto. Really interesting. I didn't know these. DC, the Pinto, normally, for a car to go from the production table to an actual vehicle takes about 43 months. It's a little less than 4 years. But Lee Iacocca, we all know his name. He turned Chrysler around. Lee Iacocca was in charge of Ford at the time and wanted it to be included in the 1971 lineup. So the Ford Pinto went from being a paper sketch to rolling off the actual assembly line in 25 months, basically less than 2 years.
Oh, wow. So
since everything was rushed and kept hush-hush, a gas tank problem was discovered by the engineers and conveniently ignored.
Ooh.
So the problem was there, and even though Ford had a patent on a much safer gas tank, which they installed in their sister model, the Ford Capri, it would have caused a lot less profit. That's sad, isn't it?
Wow. Wow.
40 crash tests. They had 40 crash tests at the time, 1971, for every vehicle. The Pinto failed all 40. That's not a good that's not a good layout.
Oh man.
Yep, the gas tank ruptured in speeds over 25 miles per hour all 40 times. It did not explode, but again, leaking fuel at an accident is never a good thing.
Nope.
10 times Ford let their customers down. The Pinto, it did not go boom all the time, but liquid gas pooling around the engine and vapors reaching the interior of the car, very common when there was a collision. When it all came to light, believe it or not, 6.5 years into the production, in 1977, Lily Gray was driving a Ford Pinto, which stalled the moment she merged onto a California freeway. Since she stopped without warning, another car rear-ended her, but only at 30 miles an hour, since the driver behind her applied the brakes as fast as he could. Sadly, at 30 miles an hour, it ruptured the gas tank, engulfed the car in flames, and burned to death Lily Gray and badly injured a 13-year-old passenger who was in the hospital for many, many years. Of course, the $2.5 million the Grimshaws got from that deal, they had $500,000 as reparation costs for injuries. And as punitive damages, the jury also held Ford accountable and paid them $125 million in damages.
Oh, wow.
Naturally, like any big company, DC, $125 million, they appealed it and got $3
million. Okay. All right.
Naturally. Yeah. The problem that was not fixed. Lee Iacocca, the man responsible, and this goes back to what I just told you. It's amazing. He decided and put his foot down that the Pinto will not ever weigh a half ounce more than 2,000 pounds and not a penny more than $2,000. Yep, $1,900. So, again, it interfered with fixing the safety issues with the gas tank. It would have added a maximum of $8 per unit cost. So all that for $8 when you think about that. 350,000 Pintos on the road in those years. And DC, why wasn't that problem ever fixed? What led to that problem not being fixed? It was discovered people were dying. Why wasn't that problem fixed? The Pinto from 1971 to 1980. It's pretty sad when it lets go 9 production years and the problem was never fixed. Why?
To recall all those vehicles and bring them all in and make the fix would have been more expensive than just paying out lawsuits.
100% correct. It would have been cheaper to pay the millions than the billions, even at that time, to fix the vehicle.
Amazing.
Beyond amazing. Amazing. I'll echo your sentiments. That is amazing. Yes, as a former Pinto owner a very long time ago, actually 50 years ago in 1973, it was a gift from my folks. And luckily, I was never in a rear-end collision at over 25 miles per hour. But a very interesting day in automotive history coming up on the 13th. Of course, the 13th. On the 13th, of course, TC.
All right. Thank you, Rusty, for those Fender's Fast Facts here on the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender. And I'm DC Taylor. And you please hear. You stay here for more. We'll be back with more of the Shale Gas News.
You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan. We have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat-eating needs.
Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems in Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender. And I'm DC Taylor. Got a replay of a few news stories we did for you a couple of weeks ago. Here's Bill.
U.S. oil sector seeks flexibility on methane rules. Constantly being attacked for methane emissions and the oil and gas industry is constantly fighting this administration, President Joe Biden's administration. They are seeking compromises. The latest article here discusses that large oil and gas facilities will begin paying $900 for each metric ton of methane emitted above a minimum emission intensity under parts of the Inflation Reduction Act that will start to impose the penalty on leaks of greenhouse gas emissions. The fees will be $1,200 per ton in 2025, then $1,500 in all subsequent years. But it will fall to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to figure out exactly how to collect the waste emission charge through regulations aimed at the regulations are supposed to be proposed by March. Oil industry officials ahead of that have raised questions of how the charge will work. They're asking for changes such as not imposing a charge on methane that escapes through unburned flares. Oil industry officials say the EPA needs to provide clear guidance on how to calculate these emission thresholds, including any potential calculations on converting volume to weight, because they say ambiguity could be grounds for potential fines and audits by federal officials. It's frustrating. These kinds of efforts are, I don't think they're as helpful as they set out to be, or at least they're sold to the public. The oil and gas industry is doing a phenomenal job across the board. And I'm not saying there are bad eggs or bad players, but all in all, the oil and gas industry is leading in terms of emissions reductions. We are in the business of capturing these products and getting them to market, not just letting them vent up into the air or disappear. So as a country, we have seen exponential growth of oil and natural gas products, and we've seen almost an equally impressive reduction of greenhouse gas emissions intensities. So the fact remains that now that we have to pay even more as an industry, there's just so much ambiguity, and it's probably one of the biggest criticisms of the EPA and other federal agencies engaged in this act, is that the ambiguity allows for them to take advantage of the system, whether it's in fining or collecting fines, or, you know, downright even harassing the industry as it's trying to develop responsibly. And that kind of negative interaction sometimes stifles innovation, as companies are trying their best to not get fined or keep up with the ever-changing, or what do they call it, the goal line when the goal line moves on you.
Moving the goalposts.
Yeah, there you go, moving the goalposts on you. The industry is constantly having to deal with that, and it can lead to negative innovation. Instead of just working with the energy industry, again, as I talk about this olive branch, work together. Let's highlight the successes. Let's double down on those successes. Let's expand them. Let's make them the industry standards. But again, I really think this just comes down to a new way to tax without calling it a tax, right? You and I and the American voters don't want to get taxed anymore. So what do politicians do on both sides of the aisle? They figure out ways to, you know, impose fees and taxes on the products that you and I want to consume. You know, at the end of the day, who pays for this? While the oil and gas industry will be the ones writing the check, you and I, DC, will pay for this.
Right.
And I just don't see how it's going to – it's not going to result in as much of a, or if any, net positive environmental impact. So in a time where, as we just talked about before, it's so expensive to even go to the grocery store, I don't think we should be adding more taxes onto things we need, like energy.
Exactly.
Clear energy spending beats fossil fuels for the first time. For the first time ever, the world investors poured as much money into low carbon energy products as they did into fossil fuel ones last year, but still fell short on what is necessary to reach climate goals. The chief conclusion in the report Thursday from the market analyst firm Bloomberg NEF found global annual spending on a range of low-carbon technologies, including renewables, heat pumps, electric vehicles, hydrogen, nuclear power, and carbon capture, crossed the $1 trillion mark in 2022 for the first time. The analysts considered project investments, such as financing for battery storage, wind farms, other technologies, and they also included sales of electric cars and/or heat pumps. The invested $1.1 trillion in clean energy was 31% higher than 2021, according to the analysis. Again, how much of that is government subsidies, government direct investment, pushing the industry towards that? And then we also started at the top of the show, DC, discussing how places like Germany, which have been leading the world in this conversion over to renewable energy, are turning back on coal plants because it won't meet their demands. Imagine if we just put a fraction of that $1 trillion back into infrastructure and then a fraction of that $1 trillion into efficiency projects, what our end result will be. And I bet, and I'm willing to say that it would be equally as impressive in terms of environmental benefit if we just made those key investments.
There you go. A couple more news stories here on the shale gas news that we presented to you a couple weeks ago. All still relevant and all great stuff to keep in mind. Great info. And thank you to Bill DeRozier for those stories. And I'm DC Taylor. Coming up next on the shale gas news will be the top five stories of the week from MarcellusDrilling.com. We'll also see what kind of careers are out there. The job segment on the way. It's the shale gas news. Thanks for listening. You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Linde Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindeco.com. Linde installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindeco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Hey, it's the Shale Gas News. Glad you're listening this weekend. Here with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll get the job segment in there. Checking out careers in the energy industries, the gas and other energies. First, the top five stories of the week. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. You can find it at marcellusdrilling.com. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So here you go, a summary of the top five most read stories on Marcellus Drilling. Over the past 7 days. Coming in number five last week, Southwestern spends more on Haynesville, but MU produces more. Southwestern Energy used to be a pure play Marcellus Utica driller until it picked up leases and wells in the Louisiana Haynesville play in 2021. A couple weeks ago, the company issued its fourth quarter and full year 2022 update. The update shows Southwestern now gives more love, i.e. money, to Haynesville drilling than it does to Marcellus Utica drilling, even though the MU produces more gas than the company's Haynesville assets. In June 2021, Southwestern said it would buy Indigo Natural Resources, which drills for natural gas in the Louisiana Haynesville Shale. The deal was consummated in September. A few months later, Southwestern cut a deal for $1.85 billion to buy a GeoSouthern subsidiary called GEP Haynesville. Why did Southwestern go wandering away from the MU? Higher taxes, onerous regulations, and lack of pipelines in our region is driving our premier MU companies like Southwestern to look at other shale plays. That's the cold, stark reality. Rusty?
Number four, DC, Chesapeake Energy update, cutting the rig count and production for 2023. Now, Chesapeake Energy issued its quarterly and 2022 annual update about a week ago. The company drills primarily for natural gas in both the Marcellus and Haynesville shale plays. Chesapeake's net production in the fourth quarter of 22 last year was approximately 4.05 billion cubic feet of production. That's 90% natural gas and then 10% total liquids, utilizing an average of 14 rigs to drill 58 wells and place 66 wells on production. Now, that was for drilling across all of its shale plays, including the oily Eagle Ford shale play. However, given the crash in prices for natural gas with this mild winter, CEO Nick Deloso said the company is cutting rigs this year, axing two rigs in the Haynesville and one in the Marcellus. Now, for the full year of 2022, Chesapeake produced approximately 4.0 billion cubic feet per day. That's 90% natural gas again and 10% total liquids here too, utilizing an average of 14 rigs to drill 217 wells and place 215 wells on production. It's a massive drilling program. Chesapeake currently operates 14 rigs, including five in the Marcellus, seven in the Haynesville, and two in the Eagle Ford plays. The company currently operates five fracking crews, including one in the Marcellus, two in the Haynesville, and two in the Eagle Ford plays.
All right, coming in at number three last week on MarcellusDrilling.com, the third most popular story, Encino Energy Utica update, 900,000 plus acres drilling under Tappan Lake. Couple weeks ago, Harrison County, Ohio commissioners got a face-to-face update from Encino Energy's Director of External Affairs, Jackie Stewart. You may recall that Encino bought out and took over all of Chesapeake Energy's existing Ohio assets, both shale and non-shale, in November 2018 for $2 billion. Among the comments made, Stewart told commissioners, "Our wells are running so much more efficiently than they ever have in the past." She also told them about work being done to drill a well under Tappan Lake in the Muskingum Watershed Conservancy District. Encino is an impressive company, in large part because of employees like Stewart. She not only briefed commissioners on the latest happenings from the company, she also was there to listen to their concerns. Folks, this is how the best companies in our industry operate. Rusty?
Number two, D.C., the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to address royalty post-production deduction issues. Now, on February 15th this year, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania agreed to hear the case Dressler Family, that's LP, versus Penn Energy Resources, LLC, a case addressing the question of whether Pennsylvania is an at-the-well jurisdiction or a first marketable product jurisdiction. Now, the case may have profound implications for Pennsylvania landowners and drillers. The issue in this case revolves around whether or not a driller is allowed to deduct expenses from royalty payments for transporting and cleaning up natural gas between the well and the point of sale. Can a driller claim post-production deductions even if there are clauses that prohibit them? Well, this case was previously decided by the Pennsylvania Superior Court in April of last year, 2022. The case specifically addresses market enhancement royalty clauses found in many Pennsylvania leases. Market enhancement clauses typically prohibit the deduction of post-production costs that are incurred when transforming gas into a marketable form. So some drillers ignore such clauses and deduct all of their post-production costs from the landowner's royalties based on the driller's incorrect assumption that all gas is marketable at the wellhead. So the Superior Court decision helped clear up definitions of what is and what is not marketable gas. Their decision is now under review by the state's highest court.
Okay, here you go. The number one most popular story on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past week. Rumor: oil driller Pioneer negotiating to buy Range Resources. The rumor mill kicked into overdrive a couple weeks ago when Bloomberg published an article saying Pioneer Natural Resources Company, one of the largest independent oil producers in the U.S., is considering negotiating for an acquisition of Marcellus Driller Range Resources Corporation, according to, quote, people familiar with the matter. I'd like to meet these people someday. They seem to pop up in every story. Range was the very first company to drill a Marcellus shale well back in 2004 in western Pennsylvania.
By the end of a couple Fridays ago, Pioneer issued an abrupt statement saying it is not contemplating a significant business combination or other acquisition transaction. It wasn't an outright denial that such talks are taking place. A few days later, Range somewhat addressed the rumor on a quarterly conference call with analysts. CEO Jeff Ventura said Pioneer had denied having an interest in his company, which seems to leave the door open for a deal in the future. Okay. Well, there you go. The top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the latest Marcellus and Utica news each day, it's easy. Just subscribe to Marcellus Drilling News at marcellusdrilling.com. Click on the subscribe link. It's only $7.95 a month or $79.50 if you pay for the whole year. And now it is time for the jobs segment, exploring careers in the energy industries. This segment brought to you by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
Thank you, DC. We'll start in Pennsylvania, where PP&L, looking for an engineer. It's going to be a hybrid position, remote in Allentown, 120 days first at home. The Williams Company is looking for an operations technician level one. Same deal. It's going to be hybrid, remote, 120 days at home, then based in Tunkhannock. That's Williams. Halliburton, looking for a service operator number one for their cementing division. It's out of Montgomery, Pennsylvania. TC Energy, looking for an operations project specialist based in Washington, Pennsylvania. That's southwest of Pittsburgh. Calfrac Well Services, looking for a fracked operator. That's a traveling physician, all of the Keystone State. Penn Hills Resources, looking for roustabouts, 15 needed. It's out of Kane, Pennsylvania. TD Williamson Incorporated, the same deal, 15 roustabouts needed in Burgettstown. PP&L, once again, a district service technician trainee. It's going to be headquartered in Frackville, Schuylkill County. Atwell LLC, looking for a CAD technician. That's computer-assisted drawing. It's a hybrid position from home, 90 days remote, then in Canonsburg near Pittsburgh. And Neighbors, N-A-B-O-R-S, Neighbors, looking for Derek Hands out of Uniontown. We have a few in Ohio. Quasar Energy Group, looking for an office coordinator that's based in Independence. Hubble Incorporated just posted positions of welders located in Hamilton. Exactus Energy, an opening for an inspector and a drone operator for their solar division. That'll be based in Columbus. OWS Energy and Acquisitions Company, an opening for a senior landman that's out of Louisville. General Electric, looking for engineers, two positions, all of Ohio, must cover the Buckeye State. Marathon Petroleum, an opening for a pipeline controller out of Findlay, and Blue Racer Midstream, a field operator, it's out of Cambridge. In West Virginia, Shenandoah Energy Partners, looking for title abstractors, it's all in the titling, that's out of Bridgeport. Diversified Energy Company, looking for well tenders and rig floor hands. Three well tenders, five rig floor hands. The well tenders out of Hamlin, the floor hands out of Bridgeport. It's for Diversified Energy. American Electric Power, looking for an energy production supervisor headquartered in Winfield. Hickory Energy Services LLC, a well tender, a flowback operator, roustabouts, and labor hands. They're all based in Blacksville. Tally Energy Operators, looking for an MWD field operator headquartered in Fairmont. Select Energy Services just posted a CDL driver and a well tester. It's one in the same position based in New Martinsville. Aerotech, an opening for an oil and gas laborer out of Wheeling. Bill Finger, looking for pipe welders. That's must-know shielded metal arc and flux core stick welding. It's out of Inwood. And New Park Mats and Integrated Services, a heavy equipment operator level one or two. It's out of Bridgeport. Got a couple in New York State. General Electric Gas and Power, looking for a gas power project scheduling and project contract management internship. It's for the summer coming up of 2023. That'll be headquartered at their main office in Schenectady. NYSEG, looking for a supervisor for the electric line operations. That's New York State Electric and Gas out of Vestal near Binghamton. Kylie Pipeline Integrity, an operator for their construction unit, must travel the entire state of New York. And Fuel Energy Services USA, looking for roustabout helpers, 10 positions based in Horseheads, once again, in the Binghamton, Elmira area. And those, as DC mentioned, were the jobs this week, sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. We thank you so much for listening on our network of stations. We'll see you next week, same time, same radio stations. For Bill DeRosia, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thanks again for listening to the Shieldcast News.